Welcome to Common Sense Care, Parenting Gender-Confused Kids with Truth and Love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their sense of identity. But in no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is a one-size-treatment plan the best thing for every person. We believe that every child is an individual and should be given the care and treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer, and what's our topic for today?
Well, before we talk about the topic for today, we should probably say this is going to be our last Common Sense Care episode. Yeah. This is number 35, and we've done two extra ones too for the Always Erin book and the Desisti Trans Detox book. So we've done 37 episodes today. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. When we first started talking about doing a parenting series, I think we thought we might do 5 or 10 episodes.
Right.
And topics just kept coming up. And for those who are concerned that we're not going to be making videos anymore, we are going to continue to make videos. We're just going to shift our emphasis a little bit. We feel like we've addressed as many of the parenting questions as we're sort of capable of doing right now or that we're aware of. But if there are topics that you want us to address, please let us know. And we can either address them within the context of our future video series, or maybe come back and occasionally do a, you know, Common Sense Care special if we feel like there's a topic that there's a great demand for. But this has been a really good series. I feel like we've gotten such good feedback from parents. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. I'm feeling really sad that we've had 35 episodes in a way, because it shows just the breadth of this issue and how it really has just kind of invaded every aspect of these parents' lives. My heart goes out to all the parents who are struggling with this issue.
Yeah, I remember early on, I brought up at a PEC meeting, I said, you know, I'd like to do some sort of a video to support parents with some of these trans ideology ideas. And Erin, you just perked up and you're like, I want to help with that.
Yeah.
And it's been surprising how, as you said, I really thought 7 or 8 videos tops and that'll be it. And then every week more topics came up and parents would send in questions. And so I really feel like this has been a powerful time for me in exploring a lot of these issues, learning so much from you. And I am also a little sad to be finishing up, but I am excited about moving from just talking to parents who are dealing with trans identified kids to kind of talking to everybody and saying, let's look at what gender ideology is doing to everybody,
right.
You know, how it's impacting jobs, how it's impacting mm-hmm. policy, how it's impacting families. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm excited about where we're moving.
And I really like ending on this particular topic of helping to heal detransitioners, because I mean, ultimately, that's where we hope all the parents end up, is parenting a detransitioner. But there are some very specific things that are going to be challenging for parents of detransitioners that we want to address. And also just acknowledging that sort of, I think, you know, it sort of reminds me of when I was pregnant, and I really had a difficult pregnancy. I'm very short. There's not a lot of room. And I just kept thinking, oh my gosh, I can't wait for this pregnancy to be over, because I was sick. I had to go in to get B12 shots because I was actually losing weight. It never occurred to me that there was, you know, a baby at the end. I mean, it sort of, I knew that, but I thought, oh, once this pregnancy's over, whew.
It's so much easier.
And I feel like that is sort of how it is with detransitioners, that, you know, getting them to the point of detransitioning is the goal. And it's something to be, you know, it's a huge sigh of relief. Oh my gosh, you know, yes, my child's finally detransitioned, but it's not over. There's still going to be tremendous amount of parenting. And this is a child who's been damaged by, you know, teachers who have affirmed them, doctors who have affirmed them, society that celebrated them, and an ideology that has really tried to damage their relationship with their family and all those who love them. And so parents, this is, you know, this is just a, you know, a reminder that, you know, there's still going to be some tension. There's still going to be a lot of work to do, that your child is basically recovering from a very serious trauma. They've mm-hmm. been encouraged to believe they're inherently flawed, that the only way to help themselves move forward is to become a different person. They realized that didn't help, and they've come back to accept themselves. But boy, there's a lot of work to do in recovery.
And we need to keep in mind, this is a cult. The gender ideology is a cult. So your kids have been sucked into this cult. They've finally come out of it. But one of the pernicious things that a cult does is it puts a new identity on you. It takes away, it subverts your true identity, and it puts this fake identity on you. And that's what's happened to these kids. So even once they recognize, this isn't true, I am my body, my birth sex is who I am, they've still got all this baggage from the cult. And part of that is the loss of themselves. If the child has been indoctrinated in this for 3 years, let's say it's been 3 years, and the child went in at age 13, that child is now 16, that child has lost 3 years of normal development, normal psychosocial development. They've been so focused on the trans cult. And I've heard detransitioners say this, that's all I thought about. That's all I did. Everything in my life revolved around gender. Well, suddenly that child is 16 and has had none or very few of the normal experiences that a teen should have. A 13-year-old is very different psychosocially than a 16-year-old, and they've lost all that time. You look like you have something to say about that.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm thinking about is they've lost all that time, and they've also lost confidence in themselves to some degree. They're going to feel so betrayed. And that's the word that I hear over and over and over again by detransitioners, is how betrayed they feel. They feel betrayed by the adults in their life, but they also feel, I think, very unsure of their ability to differentiate truth from lies, because they bought into this, because they were pulled into this cult and indoctrinated. You know, all of us have had the experience of finding out that somebody who we thought was a really good friend wasn't actually a good friend. Well, if you can kind of imagine that, only amplify it to everybody in your life, except for the few people who didn't affirm you, including yourself, because it is in a way it's a betrayal of yourself. So these are kids who are going to have to relearn to trust both others as well as themselves, and to start to develop confidence in their ability to make good choices, to differentiate lies from truth, to figure out who is going to be a good friend for them and who isn't. And those are all things that typically happen during normal adolescent development that they've missed out on. And now they've got that added trauma of that enormous betrayal to have to navigate through.
And before we talk about how to help kids through those things, another thing that's important to remember, these kids have been sold a pack of lies. You know, they've been told trans women are actually women. Trans people are being killed at alarming rates. All these things that just aren't true. And even though they have now realized, okay, I am not actually trans, I actually am the person who my body says I am, they still may and likely do believe a lot of these lies. We hear this from detransitioners all the time. It's almost a trope. I don't want to take away from any other trans person's experience. My experience just was this, that, or the other. Many of them still buy the book of lies. Mm. And they also, while they were in the cult, one of the things cults do is instills fear into the recruits, because fear is a powerful motivator. It keeps them in the cult. Some of the things they've been told is that people who don't believe in trans ideology are toxic, hateful, they're murderers, they're violent. And so they're coming out of that, and they still will believe some of these things, and that will keep them from healing and from progressing. So starting to help them understand the truth and help challenge some of those lies they've been told in the cult is a big part of the healing process.
But it's not all doom and gloom. I feel like we sort of have, you know, painted a very dire picture, but we know that children and people in general are amazing at coming through things like that. People, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, especially girls who have been kidnapped and kept, you know, locked up in closets and been used as sex slaves, you know, for 10 years. Somehow the human spirit is able to overcome even really horrible indoctrination, even really horrible circumstances. One of the ways that we do that is through these connections that we build. And so as a parent, you've already helped with that healing by maintaining truth and by, you know, reflecting love to your child day in and day out, even when they were not at their best. They know you love them. And that is going to be huge in part in their healing. These kids are capable of learning how to be resilient. Unfortunately, the trans ideology promotes fragility. And so that's one of the biggest things you're going to have to deal with, is that these kids have learned to be fragile. And so part of this process is toughening them up and letting them know that they can survive difficult things, and that they are strong, and that they can make good choices, and that they are loved, and that they are lovable.
Mm-hmm. And asking questions, that's one of the things I always go back to, is asking questions. People love to talk about themselves. You can ask anybody a question about themselves, and you don't have to worry about talking for probably the next 10 minutes, because people love to talk about themselves. So you can start with just like, hey, can I ask you a question? Tell me how you decided that this is not true. Tell me about the decision-making process. And as your child talks about that, listen for cues, listen for things like fears, for things like lies that they might still believe. And then you can say, well, let me ask you another question. Do you really think that all the people who don't agree with the gender ideology, do you really think they're all hateful? Do you feel like I'm hateful? Ask some of those questions to start getting them thinking.
And I do want to push back on one thing you said, that people like to talk about themselves, because I think that's generally true. But we also know that a lot of these kids are on the autism spectrum. And a lot of times kids who are autistic don't like to talk about themselves.
Well, and that's a good point. That's true.
And so for those kids, it's going to take a little bit more effort to get them to open up. I've worked with kids who are autistic, and it's really hard to get them to talk unless you can find that one topic that they're focused on at the time. And so that's another way to help kids who are autistic move through this, is to help cultivate another obsession. And that might sound like a horrible idea, like, no, I don't want my child to be obsessed. But if you have a child who's on the spectrum, that is a way to help them heal. Find something else that they're really interested in and help cultivate that interest. That way you have something that you can focus on together, and it takes their mind off, you know, all the energy that they were putting into the trans ideology.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm glad you brought up the idea of shifting focus, because that's really what we want to do here. Your child's been focused on the trans stuff for so long. And yeah, finding something that you can do together, or reminding the child of something he or she liked to do when they were younger, or some exciting thing they might like to try now, you want to fill that void, because right now there's a huge void in their life. They've lost the trans community. They've lost the accolades and affirmation they've gotten for being a brave and stunning trans person. And so that's a great recommendation, to find something that you can do, or that they can do, to focus on, to start to heal and shift so much of the attention away from the trans stuff.
And the other thing is to be very careful about who your child associates with. You know, we want kids to have a good peer group, but it's so important that you keep them, you know, surrounded by people who are affirming reality, and, you know, again, reflecting back to this child that who they are is okay. They don't have to change who they are. They don't have to run away from themselves. They don't have to become somebody else. And they're vulnerable right now. And so it's sort of, I really think of it a lot like someone who's overcome an addiction. And, you know, at some point in their lives, they'll be able to go to a party where, you know, there's alcohol or drugs, but early on, it's important to keep them away from that because they haven't built up, ways to deal with that. And so initially, while your child is first coming out of this and still very vulnerable, be extra cautious about who they're around and who they're spending time with, because as with any kind of, you know, addiction or dependency, it's easy to fall back into that until you've built up new coping mechanisms, healthy coping mechanisms. And that's something, you know, even at, you know, as old as I am, there are times where I still experience gender dysphoria. That's sort of part of, you know, my wiring after all these years. There are times where I still feel the sense of like, I am not like other women. I am, you know, and again, that's part of that coping mechanism that I developed. And it's not a healthy one because it tells me I'm not okay the way I am. I should have been somebody else. I'm inherently flawed. And those are all negative messages that lead to negative outcomes. And so I'm very aware of that now. And I wasn't so much when I was younger, but now, as soon as I start telling myself those messages, I'm like, I just stop it. And that's part of the therapeutic healing that I've done. I've had therapists teach me how to handle those negative messages that I get. And so I would suggest that if you're a parent, taking a child to a therapist can be difficult, but you can read up on cognitive behavioral therapy. You can read up on these techniques to help your child change their self-talk. And a lot of this is all about self-talk. Every person has these sort of messages going around in their head. A lot of them they develop during childhood. And if you can turn those around, not only are they going to be less likely to re-transition, but they're just going to be able to cope with things. They're going to be more resilient in every way.
Yeah. Well, and I want to echo on that. You helped me with something a month or so ago. I've been very focused on my weight because as I'm getting older, weight doesn't come off like it used to. And I didn't realize I'd gotten into kind of an unhealthy dieting pattern. And you shared a book with me. And the book talks about really analyzing, am I hungry? Mm-hmm. What do I want to eat? Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting for me to start analyzing my thoughts around food, because I have discovered I am an emotional eater. I eat for happiness. So when I walk past the candy dish, I think, oh, that's going to give me such a good feeling if I eat a chocolate. But if I ask myself, hang on, am I actually hungry? No, I'm actually not hungry. So let's not eat right now. And those self-talk, just analyzing yourself and finding out why you're doing things you're doing is so powerful. And as you said, that's healthy, regardless of whether we're talking about the trans issue, just learning kind of how to monitor what you're thinking and why you're doing things.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you something, and this is something I was thinking about while you were talking, and I don't know if we really considered discussing this before we started the video, but some of these detransitioners are going to have medicalized, mm-hmm. and how do we help these kids who maybe have been on cross-sex hormones or who have had gender sex reassignment surgery, dealing with the actual physical effects of that going forward?
And it's incredibly difficult. They were originally given the message that if they were uncomfortable with their body, the only solution was to change it. Well, now they've detransitioned and they're uncomfortable with the changes that they made to their body. So what is the appropriate message to give that child? I think I'm going to kind of fall back on Dr. Patrick Lappert and some of the things that I've talked to him about, because he's got a lot of experience with this. And he's actually a cosmetic surgeon. He trained taking care of children who had been wounded during war, but now he does general practice. And what he said is that as a plastic cosmetic reconstructive surgeon, if a patient comes in and thinks that their entire life is going to get better if they change something about themselves, then that's an indication of an unrealistic expectation. And they actually encourage that person to get therapy rather than surgery. So I think the message that we really need to give these kids is, yes, it sucks. You've got a 5 o'clock shadow and it's embarrassing and it sucks. But changing that isn't going to radically change your life. You're still the same person. And so get that child to the point where they're comfortable with the changes that they made. And maybe they do want to do something about them. Maybe they do want to, you know, have lasers, hair removal. Maybe they want to get breast implants, but to make sure they're doing that, not so much because it's going to cure all the ills in their lives, but just because it would, you know, make them be more comfortable. And there's a big distinction there, between like, this is going to make my life better versus I just feel more comfortable. And the biggest thing I think is the voice. I've heard so many girls who transitioned, who have detransitioned, talk about the fact that when they go in a bathroom, sometimes people assume they're actually a male who's in the women's bathroom, and they're very uncomfortable with that. That would be the one case where I would really encourage, you know, their YouTube videos. There's ways, there's vocal training where you can actually start to change the way your voice is. You have to pay a lot of attention initially, but then it becomes kind of rote. And that would be the one thing that I would really counsel parents to help their child with, because that does, that's a actual reality, that it's very difficult if you are being constantly perceived as the opposite sex. There are women who have, I think it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, and they are hairier. There are women who are hairy. There are women who are less feminine presenting, but I think it's that deep voice that potentially could really cause difficulties for them navigating in society. And so helping them with some techniques to feminize their voice, I think would actually help them navigate. The other stuff is cosmetic. And, you know, there are women who have flat chests. Before I hit middle age and gained a lot of weight, I was a 32 AA, and even that was a little big for me. There are women who are flat chested. There are women who have lots of hair. There are women who have deep voices. But I think just, you know, there's some techniques that you can, that as a parent, you can help support your child to feel more comfortable, but also not to give them the message that, you know, their life isn't going to be cured by undoing all of the things that they did during transition.
I think too, there's probably a good deal of guilt for what did I do to myself? You know, what have I done? What have I done? And what I would like to say to everyone who's detransitioned, you didn't do this to yourself. This wasn't you. And I think giving kids that reassurance, you were misled. You were lied to. You were betrayed. This was not your fault. You were sucked into a cult. Because I think that heaviness of imagining how better life would be had I not made this huge mistake, I think that's probably would be hard to overcome. I'm just thinking about myself. I hadn't gone to the dentist for a couple of years, and we moved and I went to a new dentist, and I'd never had a cavity. And suddenly this dentist was like, oh yeah, all four of these molars have cavities. And I didn't get a second opinion, and I let her drill them. And I really doubt now that they all four needed to be drilled. And I have struggled with, what did I do to my head? Perfect teeth. I had perfect teeth, and I let this doctor ruin my teeth. Well, now I think these poor kids who had perfect bodies and these doctors damaged their bodies. And if I had that much guilt about getting my teeth drilled, I can't imagine how hard it must be to cope with what these kids are going through.
And there are people, I mean, I have engaged in self-harming behaviors. I have scars that were self-inflicted that I live with. If somebody were to say, how did you get that scar? I could make up a story, or I could be honest and say, I did that to myself. And there are, you know, I actually, it's interesting, when I was self-harming, it was before, you know, sort of cutting was a phase. And so the kinds of scars I have are very different, but there are people that I know who have, you know, very obvious cutting scars. There are people who have very obvious, you know, cuts on the wrist from where they potentially attempted suicide. You know, it is who we are. It's our history. And so I really encourage detransitioners and parents of detransitioners not to be regretting the past, but to be celebrating the fact that the child went through something really difficult and came through it. Anybody who's been through a period of self-harming and comes through that, anybody who's been through an addiction, anybody who's been pulled into a cult and gets out of it, that's something to be celebrated. That's something to pat yourself on the back for and say, I did it. I made it through that very difficult thing. And so I can make it through other difficult things. And I think the key is to really help that child develop new coping mechanisms, healthy coping mechanisms. There are things that, you know, everybody, you know, and eating isn't necessarily a bad one. You know, make a list of all the things that, you know, if a child's feeling anxious or feeling unsure of themselves, what kinds of things can they do? And we don't want to encourage a person to develop an eating disorder, but sometimes, you know, having a candy bar when you're feeling down, it just kind of helps you through that difficult moment. So maybe come up with some really short-term coping mechanisms that can be, you know, done really quickly, and then maybe longer-term coping mechanisms, and just help the child to develop that list. And I would even say, write it down and have it posted somewhere. I know that when I've worked with people who are suicidal, who are profoundly depressed, you know, the advice is to actually write down that list, and at the very bottom, have somebody you can call, maybe five or six people you can call. So if that child is getting anxious and feeling like maybe they made a mistake in detransitioning, they have a whole plan in place for how to stay healthy.
Oh, that's a really great suggestion. And I think too, it's so helpful to have a goal or have a dream or have something that you're looking toward. So even beyond those really important coping mechanisms, if you have something, even if it's just a vacation in a few months, or, you know, oh, you know what, this is what I want to do with my life. Well, how are we going to get you there? What do you need to study in college, or what skills, certifications do you need to get? Or, you know, having something to look forward to and something to plan for gives life meaning. And I think all of those things are ways to help kids through this sort of healing time and this restoration time.
Yeah. And hopefully as a society, we'll get to a point where we aren't so focused on external appearances that kids feel like they have to harm themselves in order to fit in. And that goes back to even what you were saying, as far as, you know, your unhealthy eating practices, that we all have these messages about how we're supposed to look. And they cause distress. And I'm hoping at some point we get to, you know, as a society where we aren't giving these messages to kids all the time that they're never okay, that they always need to do something to change themselves, to be better and fit in more and to be more acceptable. And that people will learn that, you know, the way they're born, the way they are, is exactly their authentic self. It's exactly how they're supposed to be, and that they're lovable and beautiful just as they are.
Yeah. One of the things that I heard, PEC did a small survey of detransitioners and their parents, and that's posted on our website, all of the data from that. But one of the things that we kept hearing was that detransitioners were so grateful that their parents held the line and didn't agree with this. And they just desperately ached for their parents' love. We all do. We all ache to be loved fully and unconditionally for who we are. Now, as parents, we are not perfect. I have not loved my children perfectly. I've made mistakes. You know, there are places I've had to go back and apologize and say, you know, I did that wrong. I really messed that up. I'm sorry. I was just talking with my daughter's friend yesterday, who's the oldest of three. And he was talking about how he always gets the worst parenting. And I said, yeah, because your parents have never parented a kid your age before. I said, you get the worst parenting. And I've said that to my son, who's my oldest too. I'm like, you're the first trial. So I'm sorry for the ways we messed up. And when your sister came up behind you, we're like, let's do that a little differently. But that's okay, parents. It's okay to admit where you messed up. I think sometimes parents are afraid if they admit they were wrong, it's going to undermine our authority. It's going to undermine our validity as parents. And it's just the opposite. When you admit that you made a mistake and you are vulnerable with your child, there is so much authenticity and true relationship that happens there. And if you look at it, it gives your child permission to make mistakes too. And then to say, I did that wrong and I messed up. I'm sorry. And have the parent go, I know all about it. We all make mistakes. You're forgiven. We're going to move forward.
Yeah.
And we need to do that for each other.
I really love the idea of modeling that behavior, because I do think that some parents are like, nope, I'm never apologizing to my kid. But it really is valuable for you to, you know, humble yourself to your child and apologize for areas that you made mistakes. And again, just let them know that you love them. And there's a lot of forgiveness. Again, I think people are resilient and they'll come through this. But you know, it's really hard when you have parents who aren't, you know, I've heard parents who are like, you know, well, I told you so. And that's not going to be helpful. That's likely going to push a child away. So, you know, realize that you're a team and that you're in this together, I think is really helpful. And also parents, realize that you've made it through something incredibly difficult. You know, you have, and so you're going to need some self-care. You're going to need to make sure that you take care of yourself. You know, we tend to focus on the child, but as a parent, you know, you have just parented your child through something incredibly difficult. Some of you might have thought you were going to lose your child permanently. Some of you will never hear your daughter's voice again. Some of you will never see your son's face again. It's hard. And we feel for you, but you made it through. If your child's detransitioned, and if they haven't, there's always hope. Mm-hmm. And you may never hear your daughter's voice again or see your son's face again or hold the child close to you that, you know, you bore, that you parented, that you loved through childhood, but they're still your child and they need you. And you need them, I suspect. And so hopefully these episodes have helped. And we're going to just keep doing our best at Partners Physical Care to provide resources to help overturn this ideology that is so damaging.
Thank you for joining us for these 35 episodes. Our hearts are broken for parents who've gone through this. If you've come through it, as Aaron said, you may actually have some post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. I've talked to parents who said, I really feel like I'm suffering post-traumatic stress disorder. And I want to validate that for you, that you very well may get help. Trust that that you're going to continue to heal. You're going to continue to get better. But it's hard. It's been hard. And this is a hard thing. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that. And we want to say congratulations to those of you who made it through.
And also recognize that you might be really angry with your child. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend not letting your child know that, but processing that anger. Because when your child does something that hurts, you know, you're a human being, and that anger is a very normal and healthy response. So don't be down on yourself for that. But again, follow those self-care techniques, follow the same self talk techniques that we talked about. You know, catch yourself. What are you thinking? Make sure you're thinking positive thoughts, and maybe come up with a list of coping mechanisms for yourself as well. Because this really is, it's an ongoing battle. And you know, for those parents who have had children detransition, we're so thankful. For those who are still waiting for their child to detransition, keep up the hope. Just keep that hope alive. Keep loving your child. They're in there somewhere, and they need you.
Mm-hmm. And I want to end on a positive note. That survey that PEC took of detransitioners, one of the surprising things that came out of that for me, we asked for the parents and the children to score the strength of their relationship prior to transition, mm-hmm. during transition, and after transition. And in the vast majority of cases, the relationship strength went really far down during transition, but in almost every case, it came up to the same level or higher strength of closeness after the after detransitioning. That was an incredibly hopeful thing. Yeah. So if you are still struggling through this, if you feel like, I don't even know this child, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, our relationship is a 1 down in the pits. It doesn't have to stay that way. The little bit of data that we have shows that after transition, your relationship can bounce back and be even better than before.
Which is just a great way to end this. Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you, Erin. I've learned so much from you during this. I've so valued our time together, and I'm looking forward to our next set of videos.
Well, and the same goes for you, Maria. You've brought such an important wealth of information to this series, and I'm just so thankful we were able to do this.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.